Hey, y'all, and welcome back to Friend, Let's Talk About It. I'm your girl, Shauna Marie, and today we have a special guest with us. We have my sister in the house. We have Angel. Say hey, Angel.
Hey.
I'm so excited to have you here. So Angel and me, we are 16 years apart. I'm the baby of 5 siblings, total 8 if I include my step siblings. But yeah, she's been telling me some crazy things about myself as a kid. It's been interesting, but yeah, I'm excited to have you here. Thank you. She's from Colorado, so she came to Texas to visit me and Zane, spend some time with us. So grateful. But today, y'all, we are going to talk about dating the same type of person or like dating the same spirit in multiple bodies. Because we, when it comes to dating, especially if you're not choosing the right person, sometimes you end up with repeat spirits. So that's what we're diving in today. So, ready to dive in?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. All right, so let's start with this. So tell me a little bit about your type. Like, what has been your type in the past?
It was the loser me. The thugs. I've always been into the thugs. And I think that mafia mentality, the street hustler. That's
hardcore.
The hardcore. I mean, it's a different kind of love that comes from those type of men. And because they themselves want to be loved. That's why they out there in the streets, because they want to be loved. But yeah, it comes with a different type of love.
What type of love is that? How would you
Because I think the street mentality, they are family oriented, not always family oriented. As far as they create families, they don't always stay with the families they create. But they are out there in the streets, and they, when I say family oriented, they seek that, you know, so they're seeking it. They might not be able to always give it and stick to it, but they seek that. So you think with them seeking that kind of love that they're going to give that type of love. But no, they want the same thing you're seeking. You just don't realize that until you're with them.
That's interesting. We are complete opposites. I say I always go for the nerds.
See? No, and I always attracted the nerds growing up, and I've even had a couple of the nerds propose to me growing up, because I was a smart girl, and I was always, you know, in the smart accelerated classes and things like that. But I just was not attracted to them. I was not. Now I'm like, oh, I should have stuck with the nerds, but yeah,
stick with the anime loving the Marvel, DC comic book.
Exactly. That's where I should have stayed at.
The ones I like. That's so funny. Okay, so you have some kids, girl. You got some kids.
6 of them.
She got some kids. You kids with a Z. You got some kids. So let's talk about their fathers. Like, what was their attraction to them? Like, were they similar? Like, what did you see in all of them that made you feel like, okay, I feel like I'm repeating dating the same person in a different body in some way?
I would say that the attraction, I really didn't seek them out. They came and found me, really. And I think they were all the same in the sense that they had that thug mentality, but I think they all came with differences as well. Let me see. With the first one, that situation is a whole lot deeper. That was a forced situation, so I really won't go all the way into that. I will be in a whole nother show right now. So I won't even talk about the first one. Now, with the second one, Aspen's dad, I met him actually through our father, that he lived across the alleyway.
I remember that.
Yeah, and he was a good boy. He actually was a good boy. He actually was kind of nerdy. He really wasn't really a thug. He wanted to be a thug. He thought he was a thug, but really he wasn't a thug. So that's why I say they had certain qualities that made them similar, in the fact that he wanted to be a thug. He had some thug to him, but he really was a nerd that really didn't fit in with the thugs. He probably was a good boy, but that's kind of why after I had Aspen, I left, because he just wasn't
thug enough.
No, he wasn't thug enough. He was also a mama's boy, so all the time through in our relationship we was always with his mom. So it was everywhere we went, we had to take his mom. Everything we did, we had to take his mom. When he moved in with me, he brought his mom, and his mom moved in with me. It was like I just couldn't get a get over that mama's boy thing. He could never be separated. And still to this day, Aspen's what, 23 years old. He still lives with his mom. Still to this day, he's still with his mom. And I understand now because they're all they got. You know, it's just him and his mom. And they don't really have too much other family. But no, I couldn't deal with that. Yeah, he didn't cheat or nothing. I left him because he was kind of nerdy.
You could have been the one to like get him away from his
mom. I probably could have, but I just, no. And I think at that time I was so into the thugs that he just wasn't doing it for me. He was somebody that I could run over, you know, and it was like I just couldn't do it. So yeah. I kind of left. And then kind of in between leaving him, I met Boosie, and Boosie was a thug. He was not only a thug, but he was a provider. He took on my first two kids, you know, and treated them like they were his. And we didn't even have kids together, you know, so he really did. I didn't want for anything. I didn't need for anything. Mm-hmm. He was a sole provider. He paid all the bills. He bought me a car. He, you know, there was nothing that I needed. He took care of me. He took care of my kids. He was the type of dad that he took my son to go get his hair cut. He made sure that once I was pregnant with Aspen, as a matter of fact, Marvin's baby. So I was pregnant with Aspen. And I remember when I met Boosie, I think I was like 6 weeks pregnant with Aspen and I wanted to get an abortion. Mm-hmm. And when I met him, he was like, wanted to talk to me. And I'm like, no, I'm pregnant. And I said, if you want to do anything for me, you can pay for an abortion. And he said, I'm not paying for an abortion, but I'll take care of that baby. And that's kind of what I was like, well, you know, I never heard that. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll give him a chance. And he really did. So I talked to him and he did take care of Davion and he took care of Aspen like his own. So Aspen, when she was a baby, I didn't really have a whole lot of bonding with Aspen because mm-hmm. it was Boosie's baby. He wasn't even her dad. But Marvin, he kind of pushed Marvin out the picture too because I had left Marvin alone. But Boosie also, when Marvin would call to check on Aspen, he wouldn't even let Marvin talk. He'd be like, that's my baby, you know. So he kind of pushed Marvin away. At that time, I was young. I was just like, he's taking care of us. Stop calling. Yeah, it was like, you know, but the thing is Marvin could not support us. He could not support, he couldn't even bring Aspen a pack of diapers. So, yeah, you were just calling my phone to see where I was at. And you wasn't really going to take care of the baby. You wasn't going to help with Davion and stuff like that. So I think that is kind of what attracted me to Boosie is that he was the sole provider. Mm-hmm. And he also loved God. He was going to church and stuff like that. So he had that. He was like a demon in disguise. You know, he had everything going for him. And but it was all drug money. You know, it was all drug money and stuff like that. And it was like he had power in the neighborhood. It's like you get these drug dealers that you have drug dealers and then you have drug dealers that are the top drug dealers in the neighborhood. Boosie was one of those. He was the top drug dealer in the neighborhood. So he had power over all the other thugs in the neighborhood. So he could tell anybody to do whatever and they all did it. He had what we call flunkies. Mm-hmm. So I was living kind of hood rich. I had people who cleaned my house. I had babysitters. I had people that cooked me dinner. I had people that did whatever. I had the cable guy. You know, you had people that hooked up my cable. Yeah. I mean, I had people that cleaned and washed my cars. I had, you know, so it was nothing that I did not want for. Everything was name brand. Everything was lavish. There was nothing that didn't want for. I would go shopping sprees with $1,000 in $1 bills. And people used to think I was a stripper, but this was just petty cash that as a drug dealer, you don't keep the $1 bills, you know, you get rid of that. So I just, that lifestyle, I got used to that lifestyle. But he was an abuser. Mm-hmm. So it was like, there was the fault that I was taking the abuse because I was getting the lifestyle that I wanted at the time. Until I finally got fed up with it. He was also a cheater, you know, so he was abusive. He was a cheater. And then, you know, I just finally got tired of it. And so I left that one. And then I got pregnant with Honesty and I had Honesty before I left. But I think it takes for the babies to come. I don't know why with me that it took for the baby to come. Yeah, and it's like it took for the baby. I was playing all these games, but it took for me to have a baby by him, by, you know, that was his baby, for me to say, okay, that's enough, I'm leaving now. And people say, why you didn't leave before the baby? Because I didn't have no attachments. I knew I could leave whenever I want to. But once I had the baby, it was like, oh my God, I'm going to get in deeper and we're going to have more kids if I don't get out of here. And so it was like, yeah, I know that made three kids now with three baby daddies. But to me, it didn't seem like that. It was like, time to run. You know, it's like, I'm just running now. It's time for me to go because these are my kids, you know. In my mind, it's like, I don't care who the daddies are. In my mind, these are my kids. So they're coming with me no matter what. So I think that's when it was just time to go. And I'm trying to think. And I think Julio, the last one, came about because he was a thug too, but he just wasn't, he wasn't as bad of a thug. I thought he was like, he was in the streets. And I mean, I had already knew him. He was around the projects and stuff. But he also kind of had this mentality of being God-fearing and stuff like that. And I think that kind of attracted me to him. And then I don't remember exactly. I think we started out more as friends and stuff. It was like I was in a place of leaving Boosie alone and just had a lot of friends in my life and a lot of guys in my life. And he was just one of those guys that was around, that was a friend. And we just talked a lot until we became serious, you know. And so, and I think he also used to try to date me before I started talking to Boosie. Mm-hmm. And I never would give him a chance. I'd be like, oh, no, no, no. And then I think when I broke up with Boosie, he was like, are you finally going to give me a chance? And I was like, he was. And that's the thing. I think it was his persistence, you know, that he was waiting, that I was like, okay, well, but I kind of set my standards. I thought I did. I ain't having no more kids. I ain't doing this. I ain't doing that. And for a while I was fine, but then I ended up pregnant by Julio. And I think that's when my mind, I was like, I can't keep having these kids. I'm just going to stay, you know? So I was going to put up with whatever he put out there just because I was at that point. Like, this is the fourth baby daddy. I need to stick around. And it was like, now I'm thinking to myself, I need to stick around. And he was just as bad as Boosie with the cheating and stuff like that. But, I didn't have to deal with the abuse and things like that until, I guess, till later on. Where I think he hit me one time, and after he hit me that time, I think I was in a place where I was like, if you hit me again, I'm going to kill you. And I think that was where he kind of finally figured out where I was, and it was like, I'm not going through that no more. So we had some good years and good time together. I ended up having two more kids. I ended up taking him from Gary to Colorado with me. We had Arius at the time. So that was, Arius was number four. So that was my fourth child. And then we did pretty good once we got to Colorado for a while. But then I think probably within after about 6 months in Colorado, then he starts showing out. It's that thug mentality came out, like, oh, I got to make a name for myself in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And it was like, come on. So he wants to be out in the streets. He wanted to be trying to learn who the people was in the streets so he can hang out here, there in the streets. He wanted to start cheating. And so, and he kept, that's his thing. I got to make a name for myself. And I'm like, okay, I can't do this. But then I was like, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, I can't do another baby daddy either. So I was like, I was like, I got to stick around. So I was like, I got to hold on. And I think too, my mom had met him, my grandma had met him, and it was something about Julio where they just really like Julio. Even still to this day, they be like, I love me some Julio. And I'm like, I can't stand Julio. It was something about him that they liked about him. I think it's just because he's one of those protectors that anybody mess with anybody in your family, even if you came around, he'd be like, if somebody mess with Lily, I'll take care of it or whatever. He's one of those type of people, but because his thug mentality, but he's not a good, you know, as far as being a man that you want to be with in a relationship, he's not good like that. He's a good dad now, but that's because I also introduced him to church and got him going to church, got him into God. I remember, let's see, probably he's probably been in church probably about 5 years now, but I, no, 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 it's been about 10 years. It was 2015. As a matter of fact, that's when I became celibate, because it was, I remember talking to God, and I was kind of after I had, and I had Legacy. So I had 3 kids by that time with Julio. He still was not getting himself together. He still was running around doing whatever he wants to do. And I was just done. I was going to school. I could never, for 17 years dealing with these relationships, I had kept going to school back and forth. And a 2-year degree was taking me 17 years because I'm trying to take care of kids in the middle of all these messed up relationships. So I take a class here, take a class there, have to drop out, take another year off, come back, try again. So I kept doing that. Julio was, in the beginning, he was good. He was watching the kids so I can go to school and do all this stuff. Kind of fell off, didn't work. So I'm like, you know, still never got that. So then finally, I had to go to school. I had to be on welfare. I had to go to school by myself. He was still out there running around. And it was like, I'm working the system. I'm working these programs. I'm on Section 8. I had to work different programs. I'm saving up. I'm trying to do what I got to do for my kids. But I'm doing it all by myself. And it was like, at that time, that's when, like, 2015, that's when it was like, I finally made up my mind. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. If I got to do it all by myself, then what am I in a relationship for? You are just like another child because I'm having to take care of you. And Julio had a problem with working. So he felt like he was fine being the homemaker and the provider. So we reversed roles. Because he wanted to stay home and watch the kids and clean the house and wash the clothes and do all this stuff. So while I'm trying to work, trying to go to school, he's doing that. But then when I come home, he's out there cheating. Or there was days that I couldn't go to work or I have to call off because you're supposed to be here to watch the kids and you out in the streets. So stuff like that where I finally was like, I'm done. You know, you just get to a point where you just tire. And so, but being done, I was able to go get my degree. So I did my associates. I still ain't got to finish doing all that, but I was able to go ahead and buy my own house, you know, and able to buy cars, able to take care of my kids, able to make sure my kids didn't want for nothing, and to be able to say I do it all on my own without no help, you know, no child support, no help, no here and there. And even the ones that did finally pay child support, they fought tooth and nail to not have to pay the child support, or it might be paying $30 a week and felt like they was dying because you was getting $30 a week.
Right.
You know, so it was like, you know, situations like that is kind of how I ended up, how I got 6 kids with 4 different baby daddies. And because of the attraction to those type of thugs that they probably need help themselves, you know, they probably need some counseling, need some therapy and stuff themselves. So yeah, and I think it's the same type of, the devil will send you the same type of man over and over again. And I think God was like, girl, wake up. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you ain't gonna wake up this time, I'm gonna let him do it again. I'm gonna let him send you the same type of guy again until you realize that you've got to change something. And it wasn't it wasn't until I had 6 kids that I finally was like, okay, I'm growing up. Something in my brain is changing that this is not it. This is not who I should be with. And especially when you know, like I said, I was in accelerated classes. I grew up in doing collegiate classes when I was in middle school and high school. It was like I was in leadership stuff. I was doing pre-engineering stuff. I was doing just accelerated everything. And it was like, here I come out of high school. I had 3 scholarships coming out of high school. Never even got to go to college because I'm chasing this dream of this street thug because I thought I should be part of the mafia or something.
Not part of the mafia. That's
I know, crazy. But I did have an obsession with the mob and the mafia. Wow. And John Gotti and stuff like that. It was like that in my brain, it was like that was the life to me. You know, it's wow. Like I just wanted this mafia lifestyle. But no, the mafia lifestyle didn't come. I ended up in a place that I never thought I'd see myself, you know, but then I can't change it, but I can grow from it, you know? So.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that was a lot, girl. Woo. Okay. So I want to ask, a lot of times when we are attracting the same type of person, it's usually like something within us that we haven't healed. So what do you think it was in you that like, you were trying to heal? Like, did you feel like you wanted to fix them? Was it something that you felt like you were missing, a void that you were trying to fill?
I know. I tell people I got daddy issues. I think I got abandonment issues.
We both got daddy issues.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and I think...
Same daddy with the same daddy issues.
Yeah, and I think that they're... I mean, and I know we both got the same dad, but some of our issues are a little different. Like, you wasn't around when he was in prison and stuff, so I kind of started where, as a little girl, how old was I? I don't know, but I think I was spoiled. I was a daddy's girl. You know where it's when you are that spoiled daddy's girl. You've been there, but I was spoiled. I was a daddy's girl, and he went to prison. And I remember going to prison, with him going to prison, and I remember blaming my mom. And I remember hating my mom, like, you sent my dad to prison and things like that. And it was like, because I was a child, I didn't understand what was happening or nothing that was going on and why he ended up there. All I knew is that I felt like you took my dad away from me. Really, he took himself away. You know, he took himself away. And then, you know, learning later on a lot more about him, I understood. But I just, I think dealing with that, and then not only that, that it's like when she divorced him, then it was like, okay, this is permanent. Now you really taking my daddy away, because now he getting out of prison and now he can't even come back home. And it was like, so you grieve, because if it, you feel like they died the first time, then when you go through the divorce, you feel like they died again, because now I know even after prison, he can't come back home, you know. So then it was that second grief, because now you're divorcing him. And then I think it was a third grief, because he came back after, well, not came back, but after prison, the state of Colorado banned him from the state of Colorado. So even after that, now he is getting out of prison. He's got 3 days to leave Colorado, you know, and leave the state, pack up whatever he can and get out. So now not only is he went to prison, now you divorced him. So I know he's not coming home, but at least I know I could see him again. But no, now he can't even be in the state of Colorado, because now Colorado done banned him from the state. So now he's gone times three, you know, so he had 3 days to leave the state of Colorado. So we seen him then, and then he had to move to Indiana. That's when he had, you know, he had nowhere else to go. But I think that grieving him then, and then I think just, I mean, you keep grieving this person, because not only that, I start growing past that, but then the more I start learning about him and start learning about what happened, you know, and what went on between him and my mom and what happened, you know, and then thinking about, and then as a child, you kind of hide things in your memory about things you've seen and heard and stuff. And it's like, you start, these things start coming back, and you're like, really, this person I've loved was really not a good person. You start thinking about how they weren't a good person all this time. And then, so you're constantly opening yourself up to this grief. Are you constantly being hurt by this person that loved you? But this is the male figure in life. This is who you were learning to have relationships with males. And so you never learn how to have a healthy relationship with males. You don't. You know, it doesn't matter if it's your brother, if it's your uncle. It's like your father is supposed to be your first love, in a sense that first love as a father, but you ended up grieving so many times with whatever happened with this man, that there's no room for nobody else to love you the way that you're supposed to be loved, because you don't even know how to allow somebody to love you that way. You So you don't even know how to open up and allow that. And I think and I know there's, like, if I think back in hindsight, if I think back and I think back to maybe even Marvin, you know, I probably could have made that relationship work, you know, if I had the tools and the emotional stability back then. I kind of can look back, even with Boosie, you know, there's some things that I could have did had I had that stability to make these work and to, you know, to help our relationship along, where I probably wouldn't have just ran and said, okay, this ain't working, I'm leaving. You know, it's like, because every relationship ain't going to be perfect. They have to be worked on, especially relationships that last 50 and 75 years. They ain't perfect. They've worked on them, you know, through those years. They've been through bad times and stuff like that. But to stay together, they worked on them. I never learned how to work. I learned how to run. you know, and I learned how to shut down. And that's what I was good at. Once somebody hurt me or somebody didn't do right by me, I ran. And it was like, no fixing it, no nothing. It's time to go and I can start over. And thing is that I brought children into this mess, you know, and I kind of did the same thing that they did to me. I brought children in to be hurt, but I didn't think that I was hurting my children because I felt like I'm their mom. I'm going to love them unconditionally. But I didn't realize that later on they was going to be like, where's my dad? You know, and it was like that hurt me in the long run because the kids was like, okay, where's my dad? So-and-so got a different dad. And I was like, now I got to figure this out. Now I got to talk to them and, you know, I got to tell them the truth and I got to tell them, you know, and I got to deal with this person who I have shut out for years and now I got to find them for their child or I got to allow them back into my circles of my bubble somehow that I've closed off. And now I got to, even talking to my child is like bringing you back into my bubble that I've pushed you out of, you know, so it takes a lot. It takes a lot out of you.
I believe it, girl. That's why I'm going to stick with this one for some time.
Yeah, I think that is where that starts. I think it starts with those daddy issues.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of things start with mommy issues, daddy issues. It starts with childhood trauma, period.
Yeah.
Like a lot of childhood trauma just, would just be manifesting in our adulthood. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it takes us to later to figure it out. And I even tell people who have a hard time forgiving their parents, like, you got to understand. I'm not excusing parents' behavior, but it's just like, they have their own issues as well. Right. And a lot of them have not work through it. Like you said, you realize like, oh, I done brought my children into this mess. I'm like, sometimes they don't realize it till later. Now they have to heal and grow from it and take the necessary steps to help you as well. So that's good. Okay. So you mentioned it earlier about how in 2015, you decided to be celibate. So a lot of people, just to clarify, there's a difference. So I'm abstinent. I'm not saying I'm celibate. I just want to make that clear just in case my husband listening to this. I'm not celibate. I'm not telling God I don't want a husband right now and I'm abstaining from everything. No, I'm just abstaining from sex until my husband comes. So there's a difference. There's a difference. Just saying. But you decided to be celibate in 2015. So you kind of touched on it, but you didn't really go into detail about it so much. But like, what made you come to that decision initially?
Because I had, I grew up in the church. I knew God all along, even through all these battles and stuff. And I feel like I probably would not have went through all that I went through had I just held on to God and did what God told me to. So I felt like I was giving myself away. You know, I was giving myself away and to the point where I didn't even know me anymore. I did not know who I was. I did not know nothing about me. I couldn't tell you anything about me. I had become what other people wanted me to be. You know, it was like whatever this man wanted me to be, I was that person for him. Whatever this man, you know, or whatever my kids needed me to be, I was something for everybody other than myself. And it was just time, you know. I remember telling God with Julio and I said, God, I'm going to introduce him to you. I'm going to bring him to the truth. I'm going to bring him to you, Lord. And then I'm going to leave him alone and I'm going to be done. You know, I will not go back again. And that's what I did. I got him to the church, got him going to the church, went to church with him for probably 6 months to a year. And then I left him there. And I, you know, it's like I was like, that was my duty to God is to bring this man so this man could be saved so he can know God before I walk away. And then I was done. And I told God that. That's exactly what I told him. I said, I'm gonna bring him to you and then I'm done. And I did. And I never went back. And then I did not just him. I was not going to move forward with any other man because I was like, I needed to have that relation, rebuild my relationship with God, so that I can know myself again, so that God can show me who I was again, you know, and so that God can use me. And it's like, even it's been 10 years and I'm still trying to know myself. I still don't know me. I'm still trying to put back pieces of damaged parts that I don't even know where to put anymore. You know, I didn't know myself without drinking. I didn't know myself about without getting high. So I had to smoke weed to do everything. I had to drink to do everything. It was things I had to have my cigarettes. I had to have these things to function. And it's like, even now after I have quit everything, it's like, I'm so used to, I have my drink, I have my cigarette, I have this when I socialize. So it's like, how do I socialize now? I don't even know how to socialize anywhere. Yeah. I don't even know what to do, what I like. I don't know if I like, I'm just learning again, you know. I just posted not too long ago that I wanted to go to Broadway to see a show and to do this mm-hmm. and do that. And I'm like, and it was like, it was funny to me because I posted that on Facebook and my oldest son, Davion, was like, Mom, you don't even like shows and stuff. And I said, boy, that's how you know you don't know me. I said, because I was in drama. I said, mm-hmm. I did Beethoven. I did all these different stuff. I did just Shakespeare. I said, I performed in front of thousands of people. I said, I like Broadway shows. I like those type of, I used to be in musicals and stuff like that. I said, yeah, I do like that. And he's like, since when? And it was like, I have, this is something my child didn't even know about me, because that's how much of me that I lost, that my kids really don't even know the real me, because like I said, I was so much for other people that me, I don't know where I was. But I think that's what made me go into that celibacy thing with God, is that, you know, I had to come back on this journey to rediscover myself and let God heal me so that I could be used by him and I could find myself. And I'm still kind of on that journey.
So good, though, because a lot of times when I know I have, like, dating people, you just, like you say, you become who they kind of need you to be sometimes. And we do, especially like when it becomes codependent or whatever it is, we tend to lose ourselves. But I think that's so beautiful that you took that step back. You was like, let me find out who I am. I know it's a journey. It's a process. It's going to be a process. It takes time. But it sounds like you are learning who you are and like the things that you enjoy, things that you don't enjoy, like snakes and nature walks.
Okay.
But
I love nature walks. I just got to have a nature walk like Hawaii. Okay. So that's why I want to move to Hawaii, because I know
hikes.
No, not out here or not in Colorado, because I have and they're there. But I know that because I don't like snakes, I know that Hawaii doesn't have snakes. So I've been on this journey to move to Hawaii. It's something I got to do for me. But the beach I have, and Hawaii has the rainforest. They have mountains and stuff. They got beautiful trails and stuff. I actually just did one and it was beautiful. And I didn't have to worry about a snake. So.
I didn't know they didn't have snakes. I would think Hawaii has snakes.
No, because they're surrounded by water. So there's no snakes. The only time a snake has been found in Hawaii, if it comes through imports or something, or somebody brings it in illegally. But even when you are on a plane to Hawaii, they make you sign papers on the plane. No agriculture, outside agriculture, animals, anything like that. But yes, so that is why.
She said, I found my place, y'all.
I did. I've been on that journey for what? The first time I was in Hawaii was 2016. So I've been on that journey for quite a while. I'm going to get there one day.
You're going to get there. And it's okay, because then I'll have somebody to visit.
Okay.
Because I need to go to Hawaii, too.
Yeah.
I want to go. Okay. So let me ask you this. So during your time of celibacy, what do you feel like has been the biggest challenges during this 10-year span?
I think the biggest challenge is because we're hormonal creatures, you know, it's like you are trying to be celibate, you are trying to hold on, but then there are times when you're like, oh Lord, send me a man, even for one day.
It's not for one day.
But then you also start thinking back in your memory, like, who can I call? Like, who can I call to have a one night stand? Or, you know, just because you are, you do have needs that have to be met, but then it's like, I think that is the hardest part. But then it's like out of sight, out of mind, through prayer and through fasting and through thinking about it. Then once that thought comes into your mind, God will take it away just as fast. You know, it's like for a long time, I was like, Lord, what am I supposed to do? And I've never been a person. I've never really been introduced to toys and stuff. I remember having conversations with my other sisters where I was like, what? You do what? I know nothing about toys or nothing like that. So he was like, go buy you a toy. I was like, buy me a toy? What am I doing with a toy? You know, it was like, no. I was like, no, I don't even want to go that route. You know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, you know, where, but I think, not even thinking about it, not self-pleasure, not nothing, where you just have to focus. And it's like, when that comes into your mind, it's like, get to praying and saying, Lord, help me. Because Lord, help me, you know, and hey, redirect my thoughts, redirect my mind. Because your body is a hard thing to fight. You know, the carnal flesh is a hard thing to fight.
That's why I say the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that I've let my flesh be so controlling to me for so many years, where in my addictions, you know, in my addictions with everything, with sex, you know, a sex addiction, with alcohol. I never went past smoking weed. That was probably about the biggest drug I ever did.
Good.
But
that's
that, good. Even that, and cigarettes, you know, it's like, even in those addictions and stuff, it was like, I grew up and I really was an addictive type personality. But then those addictions came from each man that I was with, brought these spirits of addiction and other stuff unto me. And, you know, so that's part of, you're getting, every man that you mess with, you are getting, attaching extra spirits unto yourself, unto your body and things like that. And so it was like, becoming celibate, I needed these cleaned up off of me. Lord, take these spirits off of me. Mm-hmm. Take these didn't belong to me. They ain't even who I am. So take them away from me, you know. And so I think that is the hardest part, is when God starts peeling back layers, and then mm-hmm. you start also seeing things that you don't see. You know, you see the things that you do see, but then he also starts peeling back layers, saying, but what about this? Mm-hmm. You forgot this was there?
And it's, you're like,
yeah, I didn't forget that was there. But then it does make you really look in depth and deep into who you are and what you are supposed to be. And it takes some time to get back to who, you know, where you're supposed to be. But that is the biggest battle, is fighting all them temptations and spirits.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I know. I got a 2-part question. So what would you tell someone who keeps attracting the same kind of person, and how would you tell them to invite God into their dating life? Be your advice.
I think, let go and let God. You have to give it to God, because you can't do it by yourself. I tried myself over and over again, and I kind of was stubborn, and I didn't want God involved. It's like, you'd be like, God, I don't need you for this. I can handle this. I can take care of this situation, especially dealing with relationships. You know, you just think that you can do it yourself. And it was like, or you can heal these men, or you can heal yourself. You can heal these men. You just think you can do it. You know, if I keep trying, I'm eventually get to the right man, or the right man's going to find me. Well, it's going to be too late. So you have to let go and let God do it. You know, you have to invite God in. And I mean, as a woman, when God says in the Bible that your husband's going to find you, that's real. Don't go out there and be trying to find a guy because you're attracted to these type of guys. You're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna let that guy. When your husband finds you, you will know. It's like, let God send you your husband for real, because if you don't, you end up in situations like I did, or you end up in situations where you got these different baby dads, you know, and you look like, and you, or you feel like you are no longer good. You know, you feel like you's good. You don't feel like God will, you know, you're worthy of the type of husband you're supposed to have. Whether you messed up or not, God can still send you the type of husband you're supposed to have. But the thing is we can't do that by ourselves. You're going to keep getting the same thing if you keep trying to do it yourself. You're going to have to let go and let God do it, because God knows the man that he wants to send, and he knows him before we know him. Mm-hmm. He knows you. He knows what you've been through. He knows you more than you know yourself. So he knows what you need, and he knows what kind of guy to send, and he knows what kind of guy will put up with what you've been through, you know, and you still can get that guy that you're supposed to have. So I think really just letting go, letting God, through prayer and fasting, and through really just opening yourself up, you work on your relationship with God, and he'll work on the rest. Let him do the rest. That's really all I could say. You know, I'm still a work in progress.
Yeah.
Process, you know, it's a process, but you do through prayer and fasting and allowing God to do what he's designed, you know, what he's designed to do and give it back to him. You and even telling him, God, I know I messed up, but please take me back to the beginning. Give me a restart. Refresh, God, please.
Refresh, you know?
It is. It's like, because people think, oh, God is a God of second chances. We just think about that as like being saved and stuff. No, he's the same way when he says, I will give you the world. He will give you the world still, even though you messed up and you feel like you don't deserve the world. He will still give it to you. So I think just remembering that no matter what you've been through, no matter what circumstances that, you know, you have faced or whatever, just don't give up and, yeah, give it all to God.
I think that's the best advice, is to give it all to God, because I struggle with that as well. And I think patience is another one, because I think a lot of times, especially when it comes to relationships and you have a desire for a husband or a wife, it's just like, okay, but like when is it coming? So I think that's what tends to, I know me personally, I can only speak for myself, that's what made me want to take matters into my own hands. And if I see somebody or they seem about the right, it's just like, why not? I mean,
right.
I got this, Lord, maybe you sent this. No, he didn't send it. No, he didn't. Patience is a really big one.
Yeah.
But good.
Patience is the biggest one, I think, because I have had guys come along and I'm like, oh my God, that is the right one. He's everything I asked for. And he does. He shines bright like he is the one that he's like everything. I'm everything that God said that you asked God for. And God's like, oh,
counterfeit.
The devil heard. Yep, the devil heard that too. He sent you what you asked for. You better slow down and wait for me.
Exactly.
When I send you something, I'm going to tell you that I sent it to you. So also listening to God's voice. You know, also being able to praying for discernment and be and asking God to give you that clarity and that discernment, because not just giving it to God, but making sure that you know when God sends something to you that you know it's from God.
Exactly,
because the devil is listening the whole time, he's hearing everything that you asking for. He's watching every move you make with God, and he's like, I got what she needs. I got everything you need right here. Just come on over here. I got it.
Somebody said something so good that I thought about, and I forgot. I want to give credit to what credit is due, but I don't remember who it was. But they had said something like, everything that you want in a man, the devil will hear that and he'll send it. But that man will always be missing the biggest thing, which is the fear of God. So he may have every characteristic that you want, the personality that you want, may even be good character, good guy, but he does not have the fear of God, and he is not walking with Christ. And it's like, that is one of the clearest signs that that man is not sent from God. And I started thinking about that. I'm like, dang, a lot of the men I dated, I'm like, they were someone that was like really good people, good characteristics. We had fun. But I'm just like, that God aspect was not there.
Yep.
The fruit was lacking.
Nope. And some of them are so boldly, some of it is so bold that you know they don't got the fear of God, and you will still look past it because you like,
maybe he can.
Perfect.
But maybe
and
he
I can fix it. I can teach
That's
him. I can introduce him to God.
I can
make sure, God, just help me get him saved. Lord, help me get him saved. And he's the perfect man. But God's saying, no, girl.
That's our responsibility. You don't want to drag a man to church. You don't want to leave, because that sets the precedence of what the relationship will be like.
Yeah. So, you gotta just let God do it, and he will.
Exactly.
So I know my paths are coming.
All right.
Pray for me. I am on this journey right now, but I know when God is ready to send me a husband, I'm not even going to have to flip over and say, you know, I'm the abstinence. Now I know God's going to say, girl,
you ready.
This is the one.
So you ready. He know when you're ready.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you open to it?
I am open to it. I think God knows that sometimes I want a couple more years because I want my kid to be grown. I think I want it to be that space now that there's a lot of time that I missed with my kids. I mean, I've been with my kids almost every day of their life, but there's a lot of time I missed with them emotionally and mentally because dealing with these relationships, dealing with sitting in, there was times where I go sit in my garage and just drink and leave me alone. Get away from me. I don't want to talk right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm tired. I got to work. I've got to be the man. I got to be the woman. I got to be the mama. I got to be the provider. I'm tired. I don't want to be bothered. So it was like there was years that in between that I didn't realize I'm pushing my kids away that, yes, I'm home with them every day, but I wasn't with them every day. So there's that where I'm trying, you know, also having to rebuild those relationships with my kids, even the grown kids, you know, and even the ones that the last two, 14 and 16 in the house right now, is trying to have that relationship with them. So I think letting them grow and letting them have that time with me that I should have had with them, unless God brings in a man that can be that to them too, you know. Mm-hmm. But if it's some kind of situation where it's going to take me away from my kids again, then no, I'm not open to it right now. Then yeah. I can wait till they're grown and out of my house. But I know if it comes from God, it's going to be right, well, no matter what the time is.
Exactly.
It's going to be on God's time.
Period.
I love it. Okay, look. But all right, well, thank you for sharing all that. That was
You're
good.
Welcome.
That was good, girl. That was good. All right, y'all. I'm going to get into this rooted reflection prompt. So at the end of each episode, I do like a little journal prompt. You can sit with it. You can write it down. You can actually journal it. You can put it in the comments, whatever you want to do. Think about it. So the rooted reflection prompt I have for you all today is, what patterns in my relationship have I been ignoring? Where do I need to surrender my type to God so he can choose for me? I think everybody should write that out.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Like, where do I need to surrender my type to God so he can yeah. choose for me? I need to write that out.
Okay.
And then the scripture I have for you all comes from Proverbs, my favorite book in the Bible. Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. And I think that is so important,
Amen.
Especially when it comes to situations like this. Like, you have to make sure that you're guarding your heart. Your heart is precious.
Definitely.
And it can be deceitful. So you got to guard it. You got to
yes.
protect it. Yeah, girl. I mean, is there anything else you want to share?
No, I think that's it. I mean, you my sister, so I'll be sharing with you for the rest of our lives. But yeah, I think that's pretty good.
That was good. Well, thanks so much for sharing. Thanks for coming
on.
I appreciate you. And all right, y'all, that's it for this episode. Make sure you comment, you like, you subscribe, you do all the things. If this blessed you, please share it with someone. Until next week, stay rooted, stay real, and stay close to him. Bye, y'all.
Bye.